Surprise, motherfucker.
You are now about to witness the strength of street knowledge.
Oh, shit. Here we go again.
Another one.
Hello, everyone, and welcome. It is 7:01 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we are broadcasting live right here on the Godfathers of Podcasting.com. And in case y'all didn't know, we have been doing this thing called podcasting since before they had a name for it, which happens to be podcasting, and that's what we're doing. We're podcasting. We've been doing it so freaking long. We're the OGs of this game. As always, archives of this show are available on every major podcast provider: Spotify, Apple, Google, Amazon, and so many, many more. You can listen to us on your favorite smart speaker, Alexa, Google, whatever you got, we're on there. Video archives of this show are always available on our website, godfathersofpodcasting.com. And when you're there, buy some merch. You can interact with us right now. Send us a text message. Get us on WhatsApp. The number's on the screen. 437-375-2000, 437-375-2000. Send us your thoughts, your questions. Tell us what's on your mind from the week that was in news, in sports. There's lots going on right now. NBA free agency just opened an hour ago, and it is going bonkers. Hello, everyone. My name is Donnie Da Silva, and it is my extreme pleasure to introduce the Chico and Harpo to my Groucho. This is Notorious T.I.D., Chris Tidwell, and a 12-year-old boy impersonating my bro, Danny O.
I would have gone with Chico and the Man on this one. and that's what I thought. As soon as you said Chico, I was like, oh, please say the Man. No,
Dan,
he went with
are you
the
promoting
other
your album, or are you hiding something?
Is it
it's got to be an anniversary.
Can I just do the whole show this way? I was kind of
well, you're muffling your mic, better... so no.
Oh, man.
Whoa! Oh, what's going on?
I almost called in sick today. I'm like, I can't let these guys see me this way.
Look at this guy.
Let alone what the rest happened? Of the world.
Like, who you could have, like, couldn't you find something to like paste on or something?
It was one of those things.
Grab some of your dreads. You could have, like,
yeah, you got the dreads in the drawer.
Perfect idea. Damn. I knew they'd come in handy one day. Today was that day, and I fucked it up.
And you blew the spot.
You know those things where it's like you're just lining up your stash and you just, oops. And no, what had happened was I had a shoot. I booked another acting gig. I shot on Monday for a series, and the character I play is clean shaven. And I asked hair and makeup, who emailed me about the look I was supposed to come onto set with. And I said, you mean like shave, like leave the goatee and the beard? Nope, clean shaven. And this has happened many, many a time over the course of my acting career where I'll audition and have to say, yes, I'm comfortable shaving, cutting my hair, dyeing my hair, whatever you need. And then they don't need it when you get the job. But in this case, they were like, oh, yeah, it's got to go.
Wow. Question. Are you playing a mole?
He's playing a shaved Persian cat.
Are you playing a Sphinx cat?
More importantly, does the carpet match the drapes?
You know, long time. You know, I said
true.
To
makes
myself,
it look bigger, right?
I said to my, yeah, it helps. I said to myself, I said, man, you know, it was the day after my brother's wedding. Get to that in a sec. And I had my perfect beard. It was cut up perfectly. My brother Jay Chill cut me up perfect. And I had to waste it the following morning to be on set for 7 a.m. And the joke is, I come home at 2 a.m. from my brother's wedding, set my alarm for 5 a.m. It didn't go off. By the grace of God, I woke up around 6:15. I was like, oh, shit. Ran to the washroom, scraped this thing off, the fastest shave in history, guy. And showed up on set. It was only a few hours of the shoot. And I've been long suffering. My daughter was like, ew, daddy, you're creepy.
He showed up on set with no beard, but because it was the fast shave, he had a neck full of razor bumps.
Yo, thank God I didn't. You know what's funny? I talked to the actual, you know, hair and makeup person about the fact that I don't shave. And one of the reasons is I do have sensitive skin. And she's like, yeah, she gave me this whole, exfoliate, moisturize conversation. So I've been doing that all week. And thankfully, no bumps, guys. So I decided to do the show with you assholes. And no one's made me feel worse than you two.
I disagree. It does not make you look younger.
No, I don't think it does either.
No.
I
like the fact that it shows off your wrinkles around your mouth more.
Yeah.
You know, it makes you look much older. You've gone from looking like Danny O to like Danny O's creepy uncle.
or a host from Tales of the Crypt.
Like,
from
the Crypt. Yeah.
This week, Tid is not the oldest member of the crew.
I know.
This is great.
Yeah, I can't wait for it to grow back.
I can't. No, I think you should keep it. I think I have to do the show. I have to do the show like this.
Serious. Well, you know. That's why I started the show. You know what the funny thing is? It's funny that I'm holding up this photo because
That doesn't have any more hair on it.
Yeah, I have a goatee. See, that's the goatee look, right?
Is that what you call that?
Well, yeah. And I sent Steph Curry pubes to them and said, hey, this is the look you want. I actually sent the cover of this and they're like, nope. It's got to go. Here's the best part. The show is a docuseries, so it reenacts things that happened and is based on real people. So the characters in the series or in each episode are real people. And the makeup and hair person was like showing me the photos of the real people who are being played by the actors. So she goes to the
Person you were playing a larva?
Regin. The person that I'm playing doesn't exist. He's an arbitrary.
So he could have had a beard.
He could have. So I said,
"Oh no, you're playing a mannequin."
Not quite, but yeah, it might as well have been. At least it would have made sense for the shave us. Because I go, okay, so then what's with the shave? Like you said, the character. He goes, yeah, all our characters are clean shaven. Everybody on the history of the show, no one has had anything happen to them that made this show, and they have facial hair.
Who's the director? George Steinbrenner?
It's so funny you bring that up, because that's legit what I said. Oh, I hate what we think the same. Makes me feel like an idiotic, tall Portuguese moron. That's what I said. I said, yo, and she wasn't like, oh, really? I was like, yeah, the Yankees, now I know what it looks like to be a Yankee. They did not pay me Yankee money, though. I'll say that much.
Oh, but, my God.
Well, I was happy to
do it. I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you, Dan. I just want to say RIP to Danny O's beard and RIP to Danny O's sex life. I think it's really brave of you to have decided to never get laid again. I think this is a really strong choice.
Keep the music
He'll be able to use his credits. Uh-huh. Like, you know what I mean? He'll like have us on his phone. Like I was in this. You know what I mean? He'll clout these bitches right up.
You know, it'd be funny if like, you know, when people get on those dating apps and they meet someone, you should get on a dating app, Dan, and meet someone. And then like, when you get together, they think you're a totally different dude.
Dude,
like,
catfished. Yeah. That would be a total catfish move. You put up one of your like pictures from, you know,
well, that's the real thing. I have no pictures like this. So aside from this god awful podcast, I have only that show that proves that this ever happened. But as someone correctly told me, take a photo. Oh God.
Screenshot it, folks.
I know. This is why
Best. You're the best. You're the absolute best, Don.
This is the worst. That was great. He's going to fucking post the shit out of this, eh? It's going to be the most posted episode in the show's history. Pure stills, screenshots, close-ups.
Dude, do you have no idea? Because starting tomorrow is the one-day anniversary of this. And we're just gonna
let me cover this up with a photo of this.
Yeah, Brian looks good.
This is what I'm supposed to look like. Why is it so blurry? Let me try and get this right. I want to send out a public congratulations to my brother Brian, who got married on Sunday. Best wedding ever. I love you and Jody, and that was the time of my life. And that's what I'm really supposed to look like.
There congratulations, bitch ass ma.
Yeah, aka bitch ass ma
of Daniel Fraldo. I saw the video you posted where you guys fucking yeah. did a little dance number and then beat the shit out of each other like you were calling a wrestling match. Good for you.
Yeah, yeah. It was like kid and no play.
That's okay, because I'm the kid in that scenario.
Nope. Kid, have been. No, look at your face. You get no play.
No kidding.
Okay. Moving on, ladies and gentlemen.
Let me just say, the clip that you did see on my Instagram where Brian pretty much choreographed a 90s hip-hop / pro wrestling match to a 30-second soundbite of one of the greatest hip-hop songs of all time, It's My Turn by Steezo, may he rest in peace. And it was actually part of a larger 5 to 6 minute piece where he had all these different dances with his now wife, and they told this amazing story to their audience. They had videos, they had great music and great food, and Brian and Jody put on the greatest wedding I've ever been to. So I congratulate them again. I'm super proud. I was his best man, and I stood up beside him on the best day of his life, and I was so happy to be a part of it. So again, want to shout him out for that. And he is editing the video of the full wedding. So it's not just your average wedding. This is a very entertaining thing to see, and I was so happy to be a part of it. So clips are on my Instagram, and yes, that hip hop dance is there. And of course, we had to incorporate the wrestling. But credit to Brian, that was all his idea.
All night long, this is going to be happening, folks, because free agency opened an hour ago. Free agent guard Jalen Brunson has been offered $106 million over 5 years by the Dallas Mavericks. He has not signed. He is walking into a meeting right now with the New York Knicks. How good does that feel to have $106 million in your pocket and go, what you going to do for me, Knicks?
Wow.
Free agent guard Patty Mills has agreed to return to the Nets 2 years, $14.5 million. Chris Boucher returns to the Toronto Raptors. 3 years, 35 and a quarter. That's really good value for Chris Boucher. All kinds of deals coming in really, really fast. So Bobby Portis agrees to return to the Milwaukee Bucks. 4 years, $49 million. That feels high, but okay. There's all kinds of deals coming in.
Which one are you expecting?
Nobody cares until the KD one.
The KD trade. Yeah. Earlier today, Kevin Durant. This is hilarious to me. So I was talking to Tid about this before we went on the air, Dan, before you joined us.
Okay.
Kyrie Irving wanted to be traded from the Brooklyn Nets. Kyrie Irving doesn't have any goodwill around the NBA.
Right.
A, he's a dick. B, he's a flat earther. C, he's an anti-vaxxer. You know, the dude's just all whacked. Them things. Okay. All them things. So Kyrie asked for a trade. And the Nets said, bro, we'd love to trade you. Nobody wants your ass. So and Kyrie thinks the team's bullshitting him because they want him to stay and activate his clause to stay one more year.
Right.
Because he could decline his clause and become an unrestricted free agent. But if he becomes an unrestricted free agent, he wants more than the $37 million he's owed for this year. So the Nets say, hey, Kyrie, how about you and your agent take our permission, our blessing, call every team in the league. If you can get a trade, we'll do it, baby.
Mm-hmm.
They called every team in the league. No one interested.
Zero.
And the very next day, Kyrie activated his 1 year return. And then he says at a press conference, y'all didn't think I was going to leave Kevin, did you? Oh, okay. So
but is Kevin sticking around?
And then today, Kevin announces he wants a trade.
Oh, my God.
And so the Brooklyn Nets are accommodating. And they are going to try to find him a trade.
How does this help the Brooklyn Nets, though? They got Kyrie Irving, who's got to be not in the best of moods, displeased with the whole situation, didn't want to play for the team. They couldn't trade him. What do you do with him? You got a year on his contract.
You got two choices. You play him or you buy him out.
What do you think they do?
I think they got to play him because, in my opinion, like, I was shocked. The Houston Rockets this week, they bought out John Wall. They paid him $44 million dollars to not play basketball. Oh,
that's the contract. I could do that great, eh?
Yeah.
To not
44 mil to not play. And then he goes and signs for the league minimum to go join the Clippers. And it's like, so he's getting 44 mil plus his 2.9 mil.
Why is that? Can you school me on the basically the rules as it relates to contracts in the NBA, because something sounds super wrong about that. In what other facet of life do you get paid that much money to not do your job?
Well, it's a guaranteed contract.
Because I don't understand.
If you have a guaranteed contract in any job, then and they let you go,
you have to.
You're entitled. Why? You're entitled to severance. You're entitled to having your contract bought out.
But to your point, though. But to your point, though, like with Kyrie, you're suggesting, well, you got to play him. Why can't they just say, no, we're paying you this $44 million, but your ass is going to play?
They don't want him to. They feel like he's broken down. He's got a bad attitude. He's going to bring bad mojo to their young group of guys. They're like, just get the fuck out of here.
So why not just injure him?
Just hurt him in practice.
But real talk, I mean,
extra mashed potatoes in the catering line for the guy that takes him out, and then they collect the insurance money.
What's the downside to not dressing them? They have to pay him anyway,
so
they
don't. Dick swings him everywhere.
They just don't give him another. Oh my god!
He didn't mean make him be naked.
Oh, I mean it's kind of obvious. My bad, Dan.
Letting him play the game of basketball with
the
team.
What's the downside to John Wall being naked?
They're just letting another team have him. I don't get why this is a.
I am never in favor of a buyout. I just don't get it. Dumb business.
It is dumb business.
Like last year when Goran Dragic was playing for the Raptors and everyone's like, oh, Toronto's going to buy him out. I'm like, there's not a hope in hell.
Right.
That a front office that is that smart.
Right.
Is going to pay a guy $19 million to not play for you. That management team is not that stupid. But anyway, I'm really curious to see what's happening. The KD to Toronto movement has already started.
I saw that.
And, you know, this is not the first time the city of Toronto has flirted with Kevin Durant. When he was a free agent in the past, the efforts were hot and heavy. What we know is Kevin Durant loves Masai Ujiri. Kevin Durant loves Fred VanVleet. Kevin Durant loves Pascal Siakam and praises Scottie Barnes.
Yes.
We also know that Kevin Durant has openly praised Coach Nick Nurse. We also know that Kevin Durant, as a kid, was a Toronto Raptor fan.
That's right.
We also know that Kevin Durant loves the city of Toronto and spends most of August here partying. It'll be really interesting to see what happens. And Toronto has the assets and the draft capital to make it happen. So
how likely is it, basketball expert?
I don't know. It's up
that
in the
all
air.
Sounds
who do
great.
Get rid of, who do you
it
get
sounds
rid of
too
for?
Good.
Who I mean, it just
Why
got
must
announced.
We need someone in his position.
It just got announced a couple hours ago that he requested a trade. So I'm sure every team is lining up their chips.
Right.
You know, it's going to be a bidding war.
Do you believe Toronto is as interested as the rest of the league?
Toronto has enough ammunition to go get him. It's just a matter of how much. Like, they could give 5 first round draft picks. They have them. A lot of teams don't. You know, like the Lakers don't have any first round draft picks for like the next 4 or 5 years.
Right.
You know, the Clippers don't either. So they have tons of draft picks. They could give up on a guy like OG Anunoby. They could package in a Gary Trent. They could put in someone else as ballast, as contract filler. And they could be like, come on over, baby. Let's go. And then add to those players.
What do the
3,
Nets need?
4, 5 first round picks. Nets need fucking everything. Nets need guys that can play defense. That's what they need. So if you packaged our friend of the show, Gary Trent and his son, and if you packaged OG Anunoby, and if Ben Simmons ever plays basketball again, they go from being terrible defensively to being really fucking scary defensively. So,
yeah, those are pieces that are hard to let go of.
For Kevin Durant?
I know, but you added to this team.
It's like the Kawhi. It's like the Kawhi edition all over again.
Yeah.
Except he's here for years, not one.
Well, that's my point. In addition to the fact that he was put together with pieces that all went together to win that chip. We're getting rid of pieces with the names you mentioned.
But if you have Fred, Scottie Barnes, Pascal Siakam, Precious Achiuwa, the kid they just drafted, who I love, Christian Coloco, and you've got Kevin Durant, that team's going to the finals.
How many years does Kevin Durant have on those ankles?
That's a good question, too.
Bro, like, those are some of the smallest ankles I've ever seen in basketball.
He could score 20 in a wheelchair. He's such an elite shooter, And he uses almost no lower body strength in his jumper. It's insane how smooth and effortless his jumper is. The best 6'11" jump shot ever. So I would go ham to get him. Now, people are saying, "Oh, trade Pascal Siakam, trade for like you don't do that."
No.
Because that's not moving you forward.
That's what I was saying about the
if you get a if you get a KD, the idea is to make him play with your best guys.
Correct.
You know?
That's what I'm saying.
So, we'll see what happens.
How long do you think it takes before any trade goes
Oh, down? It's going to get milked. It's going to get milked cuz every team is going to make a pitch, man.
Right.
Every team is going to make a pitch. Like that's right crazy. Now Brooklyn is in the driver's seat.
Right.
You know, and this whole crazy. Experiment with Kyrie, KD and James Harden blew up in their face.
Right.
So they have no draft picks right now. They have no nothing. This is a chance for them to regain some capital and this is a chance for them to get younger and more athletic.
Yeah, they need to make a smart trade.
In other news, huge blow in the United States this past week, and we have not been on the air since this happened, when the decision was made to overturn Roe v. Wade in the United States of America, setting back women's rights 50 years. I don't even know, gentlemen, like I bring this up because we kind of have to, right? It's such a monstrously ridiculous story. We have to bring it up, but I don't know what is left to say. Mm-hmm. Like, and the fact that Supreme Court Clarence Thomas comes out and says, well, you know what? We also got to look at banning contraceptives and we got to look at overturning this same-sex marriage thing. It's like, they're not stopping with Roe v. Wade. They're not stopping with abortions. And everyone's like, well, it's still up to each individual state. Go fuck your hat. That's a precursor to a federal ban. Mm-hmm. That's what that is, guys. Do not kid yourselves. Yes, abortions are still legal in some states. This is a precursor to them trying to get a bill for a federal ban. Do not kid yourselves. And if they overturn this, they're not going to stop there.
I want to know how long it's going to be. Obviously, this goes into effect, you know, and there's a number of reasons why it should not happen. But how long, let's say, hypothetically, you live in one of those dumbass places where you end up as a female being molested and raped by your stupid cousin.
Right.
Let's say that you don't tell anybody, but you end up getting pregnant. And let's say that you can't get an abortion in the state you live in. So you go across state line to where you can get one. You get it done. You come back and then you get arrested and thrown in jail for murdering your cousin's child. That is a fucked up scenario to think of. And that is damn well something that can very well happen with this kind of a fucking ruling. This is absolutely ridiculous. It's a bunch of when I was a kid growing up in the States, there was always a rule when going through school and stuff like that. We learned was there has to be separation of church and state. There always has to be separation of church and state. This is exact opposite of that.
That's right.
This is clear religious belief dictating over who has the right to reproduce and who should reproduce, whether or not it's deserving.
Correct. This entire thing is 100% anti-woman. This takes not just a woman's right to choose to do with her body as she wishes, but it takes away her right to the care that she requires in order to live. If they were really pro-life, they would regard the life of the woman as being every bit as important as everybody else's life, so that in the event of, for example, an ectopic pregnancy, I believe it's pronounced, which I've learned a little bit about, is not a pregnancy that can last because it's outside of the uterus. So you pretty much, I think it's the number one leading cause of deaths in pregnant women. It's ectopic is the word I was looking for, ectopic pregnancies. So it's a must they're terminated. Now, I don't know if I'm correct in saying this, but this is the stuff that I have seen. They don't have any exceptions. So to your point, Tid, whether it's rape, incest, ectopic pregnancies, literally things that could save a woman's life in the physical sense, they can't even do. And number two, in the emotional sense, you're forcing a woman, you're forcing every woman to literally be the vessel to their rapist babies, forcing them to spend the rest of their lives in a situation that they didn't choose. This goes beyond the so-called life of a child that hasn't even come into existence yet. This has to do with the entire life for the rest of her days. Any woman who becomes pregnant, not by choice, whether it's going to impact her emotionally or physically, her life changes and in effect can literally end because of this law. It's so anti-woman. It's unbelievable. It's happening. The states is going backwards in time.
The right-wing response this past week has been, well, only 0.1% of abortions are the result of rape or incest. So let's stop using that as an excuse. And I responded to one of these people. I don't know. Might have been Glenn Jacobs. And I said, really? 0.1? Isn't that the same number that you righties use to say only 0.1% of people die from COVID? Like, is that right. 0.1 number just embedded in all you guys that like, mm-hmm. that's your answer to everything? 0.1%, zero. It's a non-issue. It's 0.1.
You know what? You know, what's another
it's
right.
It's not 0.1%.
Yeah. And you know what, motherfuckers, another one of your righty idiotic talking points is that there's no reason to put a ban on guns because people are just going to get them illegally anyways. Right. So your mindset is, why have law? There shouldn't be a law because people are going to break the law. That's literally your stupid ass response to gun bans. They're going to get them illegally anyways. So why make them illegal? So then where's that argument now? Because you know what's going to happen? Women are going to get them illegally. You're not stopping abortion. You're stopping legal abortion. So they'll get them illegally and they'll be so much more dangerous for them. You're hurting lives. You're not saving any.
Speaking of COVID, there was a story going around from right-wing conspiracy theorists a few months ago. Pretty much any time somebody of note that is younger than you would expect suddenly drops dead, they immediately say, oh, it's the vaccine. Vaccine did it. And this is what they were saying about Jeremy Giambi, former Major League Baseball player.
Oh.
Jeremy Giambi took his own life back in February. And he played many years in the majors and his brother was an all-star.
Yeah.
Jeremy Giambi, it was announced today, suffered a massive head injury while working as a pitching coach last summer. And he had, I guess it was like post-concussion syndrome, Tid, like CTE. He had really bad, he had a really bad brain injury as a result. And, they said that is what led to the suicide, nothing else.
And what were they saying? What were these righties saying?
They're like, oh, well, you know, he dropped dead because of the vaccine.
If the vaccine was administered by a baseball.
Right.
That's the only way it would have happened. You fucking idiots. I did just say that.
Anything to serve their narrative, it requires no facts, no reality.
Yeah.
No sense.
It's just
and the same talking points they would use to defend themselves. When you use those talking points to defend something that they disagree with, it doesn't add up. Again, like the making things illegal stuff. Why make abortion illegal? If I'm going to use your gun, listen, I don't know. I'm done with all of them.
You know what else is illegal? You know what else is illegal? Sex trafficking. R. Kelly didn't know.
Wow. Yeah.
And now he's gone to jail for 30 years. 30
yeah, man.
Years.
When you take in surviving R. Kelly, it's really sickening. Really sickening. I don't even know how you can set houses up in the way he set them up and manipulate people in the way he did. But the bottom line is he's a piece of shit and deserves to be put away for that and longer, because his victim list is super long. And as I said before, when you impact a woman's life, I mean, this is true for anybody, but of course we're talking about rape, and essentially this is what we're referring to with respect to R. Kelly. This isn't just like a one-time occurrence. If you get punched in the face, you get a black eye, it heals over time. You know, Tid can put a tooth back into his face. What happens to these women is life scarring and altering and ever changing. Like, you cannot fix what he broke.
If there is any
heart goes out to them all.
If there is any kind of silver lining to the outcome of this, it's that I think we all know the song that is going to be played over and over and over to R. Kelly himself while he is sitting there in prison. Yep.
You know what?
And here comes another one. And here comes another one.
Damn it.
And another one.
I like that.
His brother is going to be getting it.
Yo, man, he told us what he was doing, eh?
Right?
You go back and listen to his music. He was telling us. He was snitching on himself.
He was ratting on himself. That's exactly right.
It's what's called a Bill Cosby nowadays, boys. Oh,
Jesus.
When you pull a cause. Right, it's where you go and you tell people what you're doing, and then 30 years later, act like you didn't do it.
All right, gents, let's pause right now because it is time for the big hello. And this week's guest is making his first appearance on the program, and we're so happy to have him. Canadian sports fans first became aware of this man during his 8-year run on TV as a reporter with The Score. He then spent the next 8 years on air between two broadcast giants, TSN and Sportsnet. He went on to then do some morning radio, likely because he got tired of wearing makeup every day. And for the last few years, he's been the play-by-play voice of EA Sports NHL video game. He's currently the director of social media and branding for a company that builds killer e-commerce solutions. He's a Gemini Award winner, a not-so-closeted wrestling fan, an Uber driver to his active kids. Ladies and gentlemen, he's hung with Snoop, but did he smoke a tree? He's chilled with James Worthy, but can he shoot a three? Now grab your drink, a beer, or a tea, and give it up for the man, James Cebulski.
Wow. Dude, that's a mic drop. That's probably the best introduction. Woo-hoo! Any podcast I've ever done, that's the best intro. Like, you almost made me sound important.
That's what he does. And then this interview goes downhill.
And then
here.
It's all down.
Yeah, there's no substance on this end. So
James, man.
You guys are shit out of luck.
I'm used to seeing you on TV clean shaven. I thought that's how you're going to look. Now I'm the
only
one.
You guys swapped.
I'm feeling real weird about this face of mine.
He did this for you, James. He did this for you.
I just knew that the notorious TID was going to be on, so I was like, I need to step my game up. And,
See, James is a real man. James is a real man. He grew that this morning.
I'm Polish. I'm not that good. I mean, I don't have much in the way of Mediterranean that really has the quality the immediate facial hair, but I don't know. It takes a couple weeks. I go back and forth. I'll go maybe a couple of months with this, and then I'll go clean shaven, and I get bored, and then I feel like right now I feel like I need to lose about 10 pounds, and so I feel like this helps hide my emerging turkey neck at 47.
Dan shared with our audience at the top of the show that he had to shave his beard off this week for a gig that he got, an acting gig, but to you, does he look more like a Persian cat or a naked mole rat?
a naked Persian.
Interesting.
Hashtag inclusivity right there, right? Bring it all together.
That's actually Tid's search history on Pornhub, naked Persians.
Yeah, 100% true at the time, yeah.
And curvy naked Persians.
That's how he likes them.
Check that.
So James, how you doing, man?
I'm great. I'm great. Thanks very much. We finally hit summer here on the West Coast, where and for anybody that you guys may know that lives in the South Coast of British Columbia, or what Americans call the Pacific Northwest, but you know, in Canada it's the South Coast. We've had just an insane run of weather over the last 365 days. Things, you know, as a middle-aged man, there's a lot of things I had never heard of before until the last year. Yeah. A heat dome. Never knew what a heat dome was. And I, you know, traveled through most of North America, through several parts of Europe, and never experienced a heat dome until last year. And then in the fall, we had what was called atmospheric rivers for rainfalls, What the H-E double hockey sticks is an atmospheric river? I guess back in the day, some people called them Pineapple Express, but somebody said, no, these are different. So we had huge, intense flooding, and it's been cold, it's been wet, it's been seasonably cool. And on the plus side, I guess that means the lower risk of wildfires in the province. But man, I need some friggin' heat, and we finally got some here. So I am feeling great. I am not going to complain one iota about it being too warm at all this summer, because I have been waiting for 10 months. So I will shut the front door on any sort of, it's too hot. I'm just ready to enjoy.
I happen to be the president of the Shut the Fuck Up Coalition against hating hot weather. Because as a Canadian, I'm absolutely convinced that any Canadian who complains that it's too hot has added an extra day of winter. I think God or Mother Nature is up there going,
it's your penance.
Oh, it's hot, is it? Yeah, blizzard in October, motherfucker. See how you like that.
Danny, I was just talking to a friend of mine about this last night, where a parent was telling me how their kid, it was, so we finally had, you know, warm temperatures. We're at, you know, for Vancouver, you know, mid-20s is hot for us, right? So, you know, 25, 26 degrees Celsius, that was hot. And because we're right close to the water in our neighborhood, you know, that's really hot for us. But their child was complaining, going, oh no, is this a heat dome? Like, oh my God, like the kid starts griping about how hot it is. Like, is this another heat dome? Like, are people going to die here? And, you know, mom just has to say, no, no, no. This is what the rest of the world calls summer. This is not a heat dome. It's the kids are used to it.
Can you explain the heat dome? Because I'm yet to understand what that is. You just learned it. School up.
Yeah. So last year we had temperatures that hit without, you know, we love talk about the Humidex here. And, you know, we like to talk in the winter about the wind chill, right? We always make, it's always a little bit colder with the wind chill. Oh, it's minus 30 with the wind chill. My parents are notorious for that in the Ottawa Valley. And out here, we had temperatures at the end of last June of around 40 degrees. And, not to bring it down in a buzzkill, but there was a small community about 2.5-3 hours east of Vancouver, Metro Vancouver, in the lower mainland, called Lytton, BC. And I don't know if you guys remember the story, but this small little town, it was so hot, and it's typically the hottest place in the country. And, you know, here were DJs and radio hosts and morning shows all across the country like, oh my God, it is so hot right now. The hottest place in the country was Lytton, BC. It got up to 47 degrees yesterday, right? And so, you know, wow, that's crazy. But it, crazy enough, it got so hot that just a little spark, just it got so hot that, you know, just a little spark, I think of it, I don't think it was the train, but a little fire just immediately erupted, and a little spark exploded, and the entire town burned to the ground within minutes. And it was, obviously it's very sad. And obviously a lot of seniors were impacted for a few days. That, you know, there were a few hundreds, you know, in the midst of a global pandemic. Now all of a sudden these seniors, we've been trying to protect these seniors from COVID, and all of a sudden it gets too hot for so many. So it's unfortunate. But that was a heat dome where it was just for about a week, it was just insane heat that was completely abnormal for this region.
Strangely enough, Little Spark is Dan's nickname. And in Tid's single days, his bachelor pad was called the Heat Dome. Ooh. Just saying.
See, I told you it was going downhill, James.
Oh, boy. James, well, I don't know if you know this or not yet. Donnie does the intro. Dan does the rapping at the end. And then the comedy stuff is what I do in the middle.
Yeah. Well, let's leave
Donnie
it to
doesn't have a clue.
Come forth then.
I will say this to tie it up with the little. Oftentimes when I'm rolling with the extended soul patch and the duster here, I oftentimes get a lot of, you look like Littlefinger from Game of Thrones. So,
oh, wow.
Okay. So that's the one thing. So I guess Littlefinger is my nickname as well.
So let's talk for a second. 'Cause I know that, you know, obviously you're a hockey guy. You love hockey. Mm-hmm. You're all over the place on social media and Twitter talking hockey all the time. And the Stanley Cup Finals just wrapped up. Colorado Avalanche win their first one in a damn long time. Mm-hmm. Is this how you thought it would play out?
To me, out of the West, I thought Colorado was the best team coming out of the West. I thought the second best team was the Calgary Flames, but I just didn't trust Jacob Markstrom, and he kind of got exposed in round number two playing, I think, just playing too many games. I think he got burned out, and the team got away from their style. But I thought Colorado was the best team in the West all year long, and you know, I think I had gone on record that I still like Tampa to repeat or three-peat in this particular case. So I liked Tampa getting out of the East, and so I guess it seemed kind of cliche because I think a lot of people predicted Colorado and Tampa because you know, I mean, they were the two-time defending champs, and that was honestly I don't think I've enjoyed an NHL postseason like that in years to where I often find like I really have a letdown in round two and it's just, you know, because round one there's four games every night, right? And you got some overtimes and you got some upsets and there's drama, and it's round one is just amazing, right? It's you know, and it's better, and as much as I love the NBA, I struggle with the fact that the NBA is way more cliche in terms of how it'll play out, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the higher seeds typically win. You don't see too many upsets in the opening round.
Not in the opening round, NBA, you're right.
Where you know, in the NHL, obviously they've kind of got away from the eight seed to a degree, but when you look at the way things kind of get seeded, you know, upsets are way more prevalent in Stanley Cup playoffs. And you know, but just this year, you had
There's no gimmies anymore in the first round of the NHL.
No, right. And now it's, you know, you just want to get in. I mean, as heavily favored as Calgary was, I mean, look at Dallas, right? When Jake Oettinger came out of nowhere and you run into a hot goalie. And so I was just, you know, fully appreciating what Tampa had been doing. Just the beauty of that team, Vasilevsky, Stamkos, Kucherov, my goodness. And just how they went through round. I mean, they just clearly ran out of gas at the end. And, you know, when you lose a guy who's, you know, a top 15 player in the league in Braden Point, you know, that's a tough one to overcome when you're going against a juggernaut like the Avalanche. And, you know, credit to Darcy Kuemper. But I'm also ready. But I would say this, like, as much as I enjoyed the Stanley Cup playoffs, I'm also ready for a break because hockey needs to wrap up at the end of May. It's just, you know, going too to long. Late June. Too much. It's too much. And, you know, people get tired. You tune out after a while. Like, honestly, typically I find teams that I'm rooting for, if they are gone by, you know, by the end of round two, like conference final oftentimes is an afterthought for me. But this year, I love the teams that were in it. I love the stories. And I'm not much of a Rangers guy, but even that series with Tampa was great.
I propose a rule change. I was going to say, I propose a rule change that as soon as there is no snow on the ground anywhere in North America, the season's over.
Well, see, that's not necessarily a thing because there's lots of places that still have snow even going into June. It's even happened here in Canada.
They got to have a city. But they got to have a team.
The thing is by the end of May, for myself, I'm looking to get rid of, you know, winter and spring. And that is clearly a reminder every single time you turn it on that these motherfuckers are on ice. This is a winter sport. The fuck up out of here.
Well, it's funny because growing up, I love the NBA finals, you know, and especially you get to the NBA, especially once you get to the conference finals and the finals, you know, for years, just the balance of power in the West. You know, once Jordan kind of finally said goodbye and you look at the Spurs dynasty, you look at the Lakers dynasty, and now the Golden State Warriors. I mean, that's what we've kind of been experiencing as a basketball fan over the last 20 years. It's pretty impressive, right? I mean, in the last 45 years or 42 years, you know, we've seen the Showtime Lakers. We've seen, you know, the Bad Boy Pistons. We saw the Larry Bird Celtics of the 80s. You know, and then that pivots to the Jordan Bulls that completely overshadowed some great teams of the 90s. Then you get Kobe and Shaq Lakers of the early 2000s, Tim Duncan Spurs throughout for what, the better part of 15 years from about like 99 till about 2013. Mm-hmm. Then you run into Golden State. You've got the LeBron, you know, whether it's the NWO, LeBron James, Miami Heat, or, you know, what LeBron's essentially built, whether it's going to Cleveland or going, you know, just keeping things interesting. It's just been a fascinating storyline in the NBA for so long. But, you know, when basketball ended, in the NBA finals in mid to late June every year, I would want to just get outside and shoot hoops, like just go to the playground and go with my buddies and let's go play some basketball. Like at my fever pitch of my excitement, basketball would go away for the next 4 months. And it was like, ah, fuck. And now, but with hockey, you know, when you get to the Stanley Cup, it's kind of like, all right, like, you know, see ya. You know what I mean? It's like, all right, you know, it's like the littlest hobo, right? Like, hey, where are you going? It's like, my work here is done. I'll see you. I'll see you in October. It's like, okay.
You know. I'll see you till it's cold.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's like, they need to cue the, there's a voice that keeps
That's
on
one of the most Canadian references we've ever had on this show.
Well, I mean, come on. We're coming up to Canada Day. I figured I got to drop something.
That's right? Well, yeah. Speaking
that was
Danny
O's stripper name, actually. Canada Day? Yeah, that was a stripper name.
The littlest hobo.
All right. That
all the names.
All right, you do the comedy.
That's Dan's search. That's what his search engine reveals on Pornhub.
On Pornhub, the littlest hobo.
Littlest hobo.
Thanks, man.
Everyone's scoring on Dan.
You know, James, since we have this hateful relationship, I want to speak a little bit about the hate that exists about Canada. For the team that I have the misfortune of loving and have spent my entire life cheering for, you're out on the West Coast, so I know there's got to be a lot of Leafs hate out there that expands across the country. I'm very curious to know if you could fill us in a little bit about the culture of Canadian hockey fans who are not Leafs fans. And I want to follow that up with, what the hell do we do in Toronto? Because during the playoffs, there was a statistic that came up that I had forgotten or just maybe forced myself to not remember. And that's that the Leafs have not exited the first round since 2004. And that has to be one of the most embarrassing.
No, they exit the first round. You mean advance past the first?
They haven't won. They haven't won a round since 2004. Yeah.
Correct.
They're great at exiting.
My bad. They have an advanced poor choice of words past the first round of 2004. So we're getting I'm just in a place where we deserve the hate we get. What do we do about it? But I am curious to hear what they're saying about us out there.
Well, I think sometimes I laugh in the sense that, you know, the Chicago Cubs went 100 years without winning a World Series.
Right.
And they essentially became known as the lovable losers, right? But there was a lovability about the Cubs forever, that it's hard to hate a team that just never wins. And that's what I sometimes chuckle about here outside of Toronto, where it's like, how do you have so much hate for a team that doesn't win? Right. Now, I will say this. Exactly. I will say this. A lot of the hate for the Leafs on this side of the country stems, I think it's less about the team and more about the system, which, you know, to steal a line from The Wire, the game is rigged, right? Mm. And in the sense that when you look at from a media standpoint, all the head offices, the overwhelming majority of corporate Canada is based in
Toronto.
Wait for it, Toronto. Right. So there, I don't want to say it's a penis envy, but there is a strong element of disdain over programming and executive and decisions that are made that, you know, are Ontario based, that impacts the rest of the country. Now, I will say this. It's 2022. It's 2022. And every game, every game is on TV now, right? Like, you know, if you're a Flames fan, every television game. And I think we are probably, I'm just going to base it by a broad stroke here, but I'm going to say that we're all probably of the same vintage where we grew up and not every game was on TV, right?
That's great.
If you wanted to catch your team.
TVs.
Yeah, so there you go, right? Like, I was still excited about the invention of the wheel for a while. So the point being is, for a long time, and especially if you go back to, you know, people that are old enough from the 90s or, you know, going, okay, it's hockey night in Canada. There's only one game on Saturday night. You know, this is back in the day. And the one game was typically every Saturday night, the Toronto Maple Leafs, right?
Mm-hmm.
because, you know, there's an old adage in media, play the hits. And so where's your largest audience? Where's your largest fan base? Where's the money? And the fact is, like, the Leafs are a big ticket draw. They bring in more eyeballs. They bring in way more money. They bring in way more revenue than any other team in the country, no matter how successful the Montreal Canadiens are, no matter how successful the Vancouver Canucks are. The fact is that they are, you know, that is the difference that Rogers, when they paid $5.5 billion or $5 billion for the television deal back, 8 years ago now, the hope was that you would have a Leafs team competing, contending for a Stanley Cup. And if you could get to a conference final as a Leafs team getting to the Final Four, like, that pays for that deal annually,
right?
If you have a competitive Leafs team that's winning a couple of rounds, that pays for that television deal. But the problem is that they were terrible for the first 3 years of that. And then they've been, this is six straight years that they're flaming out. And hey, look, there's no shame to losing to Tampa Bay in seven games in a best of seven series. But the problem is, you know, are you just simply waiting as an organization to age, like, that the Lightning are going to get too old and, hey, oh, we got them now. You know, they've just, we waited that 4 years getting our asses kicked, but, you know, it's getting blown out, getting knocked out by Columbus in one round. It's getting knocked out by Washington in a round. It's getting knocked out by the Bruins a few times. This time it's Tampa. It's just enough of the excuses, right, at some point. But I'm getting off track here. But the point is, I think there's a resentment. I think it's oftentimes less about the Leafs and more about the establishment and the system. It's more about they're pissed off at Rod. You know, for years it was TSN. Nicknamed the Toronto Sports Network. And then now that Sportsnet has the television rights, it's more about, you know, Sportsnet, where, you know, I mean, if you're a Leafs fan, or what I struggle with is you've got all these regional channels, and at the end of a game, they just basically, because it's cheaper content, to just play your, you know, your Sports Center or your Sportsnet Central, where, you know, I think you have a lot of hockey fans that would happily take a post-game show. Like, you know, I remember when I was at Sportsnet, John Tortorella was the head coach of the Leafs, and here I was in Vancouver, and I said, guys, we've got to take John Tortorella's press conference live every night. Like, we may not say anything, but you know what? He might lose his fucking mind one night, and if he does... we have it live, and that's amazing television. And you know what? I just couldn't win that battle, because it's all, well, the crew's going to have to stay later because everybody was based in Toronto. And yeah, it's just the battles you face, that the bodies, the executives, the decision makers, everything is geared. It's like SportsCenter on TSN. You know, they run that morning loop, like, you know, I mean, that morning loop, and I did some of those skeleton shows, but like when Jay and Dan were together, and now it's Jay. I mean, that show, it might be live at 1 o'clock in the morning Eastern time or 10 o'clock Pacific, which is kind of a prime time viewing on the Pacific. But the priority is all about that morning loop that's going to run from 3 o'clock Eastern time till noon that day, right? So it's less about that one live show and more about the nine times that you will rinse and repeat for that show for the kids that wake up in the morning. That's where the hate comes from.
I remember early in my career, when I was working at the Fan 590, and I was also doing, nights working on the row at Sports Desk at TSN, just slugging away, you know, marking down time codes. The row was the money place, man. That was so much fun for a 19-year-old kid. And then, you know,
look where it got you.
And then going up and writing shit for Landsberg over at OTR. I was having a blast. But I remember my first day on the row, Darren Detition loses his shit because he's like, really? We're leading with the Leaf game in a blowout, a garbage game, guys? Really? Mm-hmm. Toronto Sports Network, here we go.
And
I don't remember who.
And Dutch is an Edmonton guy. Like, he's a prairie guy, right? So he gets
a prairie guy. And then someone, I can't remember who it was. It might have been, I don't remember who it was. Someone cut him off, said, shut the fuck up, Dutch. It's Toronto country. You know? And I'm like,
that wasn't somebody on the row, though. That was somebody in a comfortable position. Yeah, yeah.
No, it was an anchor. Yeah.
There's a simple rule around the house.
It was Gino.
A simple rule around the house, boys. If you pay the bills, you make the rules.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And that's honestly, that's the reality where the lease. I mean, look at the value, right? Like, look at honestly, if you ever take a look at television ratings, like a regional audience for a Leaf game is pretty close. Like, pretty close to 1 million viewers or 750,000 for just a regional game in only the province of Ontario, or in Southern Ontario, because it doesn't even reach out into Ottawa, right? It's not even close.
James, we got some text messages from the audience. Can we throw a couple questions at you?
Sure.
All right. Here's one right now. Hey, Cebulski, was that the most Bush League thing you ever saw in the Stanley Cup? Kucherov losing his shit and throwing his gloves because his trainer didn't have the stick ready. WTF.
You know, I will say this. You could tell. I think at times, especially in those late games, I think you're kind of like, you know, Tampa, like you just, they argued and they lobbied for everything down the stretch. Mm-hmm. I just think that's a sign of just how competitive that team is, right? Like that team knows how to win. And I have a hard time, like, kind of say, it's not sour grapes or Bush League. I think to me, it's just, you want to win. And I don't think guys necessarily, when you've won at that level, I don't think guys necessarily take it personal. You know, I don't know. I mean, I come from a generation that got yelled at and got screamed at when I didn't do my job properly or, you know, get a whack in the back of the head from my dad, like just if I acted like an idiot. And so I don't necessarily have a problem with it just because that team was like willing to take a bullet in order to win that Stanley Cup again. Like, look at what they've done, man. Look at those bodies dropping. Like, look at the stories that we've seen from that team in the last 3 years, right? Like, Stamkos could not play. And, you know, comes back for that one shift and scores a goal. Like, you know, and now that team was able to win without a guy who's, you know, Stamkos is going to finish. He's going to hit 500 goals at some point next year, right? And this is a guy that, you know, think of the injuries that he's endured and he still is closing in on 500 goals. And, you know, he's got two Stanley Cups to his name, like scored 60 goals before. He's been cheated out of, you know, a few Olympic experiences because of obviously a pandemic and a badly broken leg. And he's come back time and time again. Braden Point trying to play with like a torn quad, like just crazy shit. Mm. And so I guess if you're looking for me to say Bush League, I didn't have a problem.
There's another one here. Yes or no? Will Ovechkin break Gretzky's record?
Yes.
Mm. Which
Pretty
one?
Yeah. Which one? The goals.
more drinks or more goals?
Yeah. I was gonna say, you think it, not points.
Yeah. No. Not points. Goals.
He's close on goals already.
You know, I feel like I've been saying this for probably about 3 years, man. Like, it's pretty crazy that we're even having this conversation. And what's crazy is that we're talking about a guy who is going to go down as the greatest goal scorer in the history of hockey. In Alex Ovechkin, barring like a career-ending injury here in the next year or two, right? But he's not even the best player of his generation, right? I mean, if you had a choice, Sidney Crosby or Alex Ovechkin, I mean, you're taking Sid all day, right? I mean, here's a guy who we talked about.
Good Canadian from the time, boy.
Well, I mean, but it's crazy. Like, think about the hype we've had around Sidney Crosby for the last 20 years, right? We started talking about Sid at 13, 14, 15, and even Gretzky saying it like 15, like this kid's going to break all my records. Like that, talk about pressure when somebody says something like that. And all he has done is go out and live up to the hype, whether it's winning World Juniors, whether it's scoring one of the biggest goals or one of the biggest moments in the history of our country's sporting, life, you know, to score that golden goal in 2010, and then to go on and win three Stanley Cups. And you know what? I'll tell you what. If there was the only team I said that I thought could knock off Tampa in the East was Pittsburgh and the season that Sid was having, and had they not been reduced to a third string goaltender, I'll tell you what, I don't. And then Sidney Crosby got hurt as well. Right. So, I mean, there was no, it basically took an injury and three goalies to get hurt for Pittsburgh to get knocked out. But like, look at the run that Sid was on. Like, that entire series turned when 87 went down.
There's another question that just came in. It says, hey guys, love the show. Longtime listener, first time texter. James, on episode 44 of The Godfathers of Podcasting, Kwame Mason, the director of Soul on Ice, was on the show. And the guys asked, does hockey have a racism problem? Do you feel hockey has a racism problem?
I think hockey has a problem with a lack of diversity and representation. That's to me, I think that's the bigger problem. It's, you know, I think there's always going to be people that, unfortunately, racism exists and it exists everywhere. Do I think it's a major problem in hockey? I don't think the league is completely just loaded with racists, but hockey is a white guy sport, right? And I think the NHL is trying really hard, really hard. And I think the broadcasters are really trying to tell these stories of diversity and inclusivity. And you know what? Look, unfortunately, the ugly stories are still out there. But I mean, how many players, how many persons of color can you name in the NHL right now in a league of almost of around 700 players, right? Like, you're kind of just over two hands, you know, there's maybe two dozen. Like, it's a small percentage. And just generationally, you know, as Canada becomes more and more diverse, like, you're starting to see it. Like, you know, you look at junior hockey and like, just as a perfect example, and far be it from me to be a de facto or an expert on race here as, you know, as a middle-aged white guy. But when I was, you know, growing up, my last name is Cebulski. There were four Cebulskis in the phone book in Ottawa. One was us, one was my dad's brother, and one was my grandparents. And then there was another Cebulski, but it was spelled differently, and we were all kind of like, well, who the hell is that? But over time,
he was hiding from the law.
Exactly. He was running. And and my point is that nobody could pronounce Cebulski as a kid. Like, Cebulski might as well have been written in hieroglyphics back in the early 1980s. And now Cebulski is a relatively easy-ish name to pronounce when you kind of look at it comparatively to just so many more names that you see. And, you know, the one thing I'm kind of proud of to be a part of the NHL video game with EA Sports and Electronic Arts is, you know, there's a very diverse team behind the scenes, you know, guys from all different walks of life, and the team is spread out where, you know, there's some team members in Brazil and in Argentina and some down in Florida, and obviously a bulk of the team here in Vancouver. But, you know, I was proud of the fact that, you know, partly self-serving as well, to have my name in a video game, right? Because, you know, Cebulski was never, you know, if you had, it's like when you were a kid and you go to a store and you're looking to find your name on a mug or on a pencil or something, right? If you had a different name, good luck, right? They were all pretty much the Kevins and the Patricks and the Sean's and the Jasons, and that was about it, you know, exactly. And so the point being is, like, we've really tried to make a point in the last couple of years to add those, just those names. And I'll do a roll call once a year in the fall to kind of just ask people on social media, like, hey, you know, let's try to get those names in the game. And, you know, so, you know, I would just say that, you know, the sport is changing. It's not as I think you just look at the last names. Like, it's not just Smith and Jones and Thompson anymore. There's, you know, there's Sings and there's Dollywalls and
there's Kadri. You know,
there's Kadri. There's a great example, right? And it's not just, you know, and from a diversity standpoint, it's not just a Russian name or it's not just a Finnish name. You're starting to see, you know, the multiculturalism sprinkled in. Now, is it happening overnight? It's certainly not as fast as I think some people would like, but, you know, it's going to take time. And you know, one of the biggest problems with that is money, right? Like, it is not an easy sport for new kids. It's not an easy sport for new Canadians.
No,
it's not. Well, no, it's just, I mean, look at the cost that people, you know, to play minor hockey, I mean, to get your gear. I mean, look at the price of a stick now. Like, that's expensive. Like, I just go for a skate once a week with some buddies, and, you know, but I think to myself, man, if this composite stick breaks that I paid 10 years ago, I think I paid $50 for it at Costco. Like, I'm thinking to myself, the next one. Every once in a while, I walk by one of those, you know, hockey stores or Sport Check, and I'm like, oh my god, $120 for, like, I cried the first time. My dad bought me a Titans, Wayne Gretzky red and white Titans stick in the early 80s. It lasted 3 games and broke. I sobbed on the bench because I knew, like, there's no way in the hell he was going to buy me another one of those. Like, that costs all my own. That was a $25 stick, right? And so, yeah, I just think hockey is not – it's not affordable. It is
– Right, that is the big deal.
There's a lot of affluence, especially to play at higher levels. And yeah. I mean, I've got friends that talk about spending $10,000 with their 10-year-old. Right, like a 10-year-old playing hot, spending 10 grand for hockey, like that's probably more, you know what I mean? Like, and that's where, you know, people just say, I can't do that.
And
you know what, just to echo that point, you talk about the lack of diversity, and it's starting to change, but that same lack of diversity, you notice it, like when I go to a Leaf game and I'm in Toronto and the crowd is 98% white men and women, and I'm like, Toronto's not 98% white men and women.
No,
I mean, to me, it's a completely different thing, right?
Completely.
No, I mean, I've long said Toronto to me is the most diverse city in the world, right? Like, it just is. I mean, I lived on Brock Avenue, right between Dufferin and Lansdowne, just off College Street for years, and. Man, like, I love the fact that there was so much diversity. Yeah, we were just north of Parkdale. We were right next to Dufferin Grove. We were just south of the Suffren Mall, and you know, it was just everybody was there, though. The Portuguese, the Italians. You know, when a Euro championship was going on, suddenly you realize, like, Little Turkey was just up the road, and you know, and the Brazilians were just around the corner, and. You know, and then there was, you know, just Indian restaurants, and oh my God, I miss jerk chicken and Jamaican patties out here, right? Like, it just, I mean, that's what's great. And when you go to a Raptors game, you see that, right?
Absolutely.
You see how diverse it is. And when you get to hockey, and you know, Raptors tickets aren't cheap anymore now, but you definitely see more of a diverse crowd in from a basketball standpoint or a Raptors game than 100%. You do where hockey. And I think there's just a that's more generational, I think, too, right?
That's a fine, Tid.
I was going to say, I thought that was the wrap it up.
I know, but, I mean, that's what you were doing, too.
That's exactly what it is. That's wrap the Oscar, that's well, the Oscar well, music right there, pal.
We got Joey Jeremiah coming on here. Come on, Sawalski, hurry up.
Hey, James, speaking of last names, before we go, one that I want to mention is a text message that I just got to pass along to you. It is from my brother, Brian, who was just married this past Sunday.
He Congrats, says, Ryan.
Tell him Feraldo says what's up, bitch. I know you Feraldo. Know who he is now.
Oh, I know Feraldo. Oh, my God. Does he still have the flow? Does Feraldo have the flow?
Oh, no. He's as bald as can be.
He's balder than Dan's face.
Yeah,
maybe that's why he's so bitter calling people bitches in his 40s now. Come on, man. Feraldo.
He has not given it up, man. But you know
what? Well, Somebody still got some flow, you know?
That just goes to show how far back you know, man. But
that's so funny. Going back to the score days, I guess, eh?
Absolutely, And that's – I mean, that was the thing. We were all just kids there, right? I mean, that was – honestly, I am so thankful of that experience. You know, obviously, from an on-air standpoint, you know, people remembered, you know, Tim and Sid and Martine and Cavi, obviously, and – you know, Greg Sansoni, who's now, you know, vice president at Sportsnet. You know, you just, the list goes on. And Steve Koulias as well. Elliot Friedman, who, you know, is probably the most recognizable in the country now amongst everybody, you know, with what he's done and the success. But, I mean, just so many great people behind the scenes, you know. And the personalities, like, everybody was just, you know, just a unique character. And I think we were all, and that was kind of the beauty that we were all kind of allowed to be ourselves, right? Mm. And, you know, so many of the great editors and, you know, and the talent and just, you know, I think that's one thing professionally that I think no matter what you do in life, I think there's always that sense of motivate me, right? Like, you're always going to have somebody motivated if you give somebody that creativity and that freedom to kind of do their thing. And, you know, I think that was the one thing that Anthony Shoshone, who was the guy who gave me my opportunity, all those years ago, who was kind of our boss, and he just let us be us. So oh my God, like if you were to pull like just some of the old highlights that I had done, you know, from the late 90s, early 2000s, that how many wrestling references I would have made. Oh, yeah. Like just like, oh my God. Like, you know, and you know, it just, everybody had their own thing.
Did you get in shit for them? Cause we heard stories of like McAuliffe would be like, hey guys, like Tim, shut up already with the wrestling stuff. And like, did anyone ever say to you like, enough, James?
No. I mean, some people just weren't into it. They'd maybe just kind of shake their head, but I mean, it was just, yeah. I mean, I was all over it. Right. I mean, it was just every little reference, you know, McAuliffe was one that really kind of broke the mold in a lot of ways, because Tim had a unique voice, you know, a different sort of delivery. And he was the guy who, I give Tim a lot of credit. He was the first to really start incorporating hip hop references.
Yeah. I was just going to say, yeah.
You know, and the one that just, I mean, it just like, Pitch Better Have My Money was so like at the time was so like walking that line, but he used, I mean, there were so many B.I.G. lines just, oh my God. Tim was so creative and he was so meticulous.
I'll make a slight correction to that. The first person I remember in Canadian broadcasting and sports broadcasting to start dropping hip hop references was Strombolopoulos. However, as Strombolopoulos
on radio,
that's right. And as Strombo often says, it doesn't matter who did it first, only who did it bigger and better. So McAuliffe gets the nod.
He gets the win. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, it was funny. I mean, to be debatable, like the fan had a huge audience too, right? And based on looking at some of those ratings that we had, you know, Strombo probably had a bigger audience than we certainly did on many nights at the Score, but it was
we used to joke when we were working overnights, the only ones listening to us are drunks and cab drivers, you know, when we're working the overnight shift. But
I don't. Yeah. Oh, no, that's the captive audience, right? Where
they're not going anywhere.
Well, is anybody listening? But then you're surprised at, you know, I did a few overnights here and there in for classic rock stations in Ottawa. And, you know, you kind of wonder at some point, like, is anybody listening? And then just sometimes somebody calls in and just. Or it may come up in an anecdote months later where, I mean, I worked in community television for years and it was the same sort of feeling, like, you know, you're kind of like Wayne's World and you're kind of just talking to a camera and you're wondering, is anybody actually watching this? And, you know, cause I mean, you think about all the times you flip channels and you said, what the fuck is this? Right. And probably people say the same thing, but then you're walking down the street and like, I'll never forget I used to go out, we'd go to the Byward Market in Ottawa and, you know, we'd howl at the moon with my buddies and I, kind of late teens, early 20s. And at the peak of like when Monday Night Raw was going crazy with Stone Cold and like the Bret Hart feuding and all of it. And, you know, my buddies and I, we would start wrestling matches on the street. Right. And I would be the wrestling referee. So all of a sudden I would spread people out. Like I would all of a sudden, like I was pushing people away and like make some room, you know, and lots of hands, like watch the hands, open it up. And, you know, big, loud. And like, we do dumpster match. Like if there was a dumpster, somebody got thrown in a dumpster, right? Like this is how we operated. And I, you know, never thinking that anybody knew who I was, because I just was, you know, I would talk on the radio a couple of times and I was on community television, right? Like I never thought of myself as a star in any way, shape or form. And I remember a few years had gone by and I remember there was a guy, he was a bartender at this pub, this very little hole in the ground pub. And if I ever, in the rare events that I got a date, I always felt like I'm just going to go to this place because nobody knows who I am. I'm not going to be too embarrassed and, you know, go here and be quiet and just be anonymous. Years go by and that bartender who we never made conversation. It was just, hey, can I get a pint or whatever? And blah, blah, blah. And years go by. That guy walks by one night after I had kind of established myself for a few years on the television side. I had since moved to Toronto. And he walks by and I was back visiting family and friends in Ottawa. And he goes, man, you used to be the best wrestling referee on the street. You're like, oh, okay. I guess people are watching every once in a while. So,
what I'm hearing as we say goodnight, what I'm hearing is at Brian Feraldo's wedding, when he broke out into a wrestling match with Dan, you guys needed Cebulski to ref that shit.
That would have been good. Yeah.
That's what should have happened. But Feraldo,
are we not talking any wrestling here tonight?
Unfortunately.
No ball, no KD, nothing.
I know, dude. We are right up against the clock. But listen,
bullshit.
Let's
Tidwell, how do you let this happen to me? You know?
Well, I mean, you know, this is the thing that we have to deal with. If it wasn't for all the sponsors saying, hey, you got to shut this down at a certain time, I would go forever, quite honestly. You know?
Don't tell me the sponsors are telling you to wrap it up. Come on. They want the shout outs. Come on.
All right. We don't have any of those.
Well, thank you very much for having me. And have a great summer.
I wanted to talk about you at the Gene Kaninsky Hall of Fame induction. I wanted to talk about all that stuff and your wrestling love. And we're just going to have to do it again, James. We'll have you back on, okay? Sooner than later.
We'll run it back. Gentlemen.
It took us 6 months to book this appearance, but we'll make sure that the next one comes together quicker.
There we go. My best to Feraldo, and nice catching up with you guys, man. Have a great summer. And
respect, brother. You
stay
too,
safe
man.
Out there. Cheers, guys. Nice catching
thanks,
up.
Thanks, Cebulski.
Peace.
James Cebulski. Check him out. He's on socials. We'll post everything up on godfathersofpodcasting.com. We are out this bitch. My bro, Danny O, anything you want to say?
Yeah, bitch. All I hope is that by the next time we do this motherfucking show, my face grows back.
Tidwell?
I hope that by the next time we do this show, his fucking face grows back.
That's Tid. That's Dan. I'm Donnie. Thank you, James Cebulski, and thank you all of you for tuning in. You can catch the archive on godfathersofpodcasting.com or anywhere you get your podcast. We will see you next time.
Fuck this shit, I'm out. Mm-mm. Fuck this shit, I'm out.
No thanks.
Don't mind me. I'ma just grab my stuff and leave. Excuse me, please. Fuck this shit, I'm out.
Nope.
Fuck this shit, I'm out.
All right, then.
I don't know what the fuck just happened, but I don't really care. I'ma get the fuck up out of here.
Fuck this shit, I'm out.
Look at that face.